I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Leftovers Podcast with Derek Kramer.
I'm going to say a stupid thing right now. Pudding. Where's my money?
Frank R. Curry.
I didn't say run through a wall. Do it again? Okay.
And Kyle Powell.
When the Sabres were actually in a playoff spot for the entire year.
On WGR550.com.
Welcome into another episode of Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer.
And Kyle Powell.
And there's no Frank R. Curry today. Frank taking the day off, and Frank's probably taking the next one off along with me, probably. I'm just going to warn you right there, Kyle. We might have only one episode this week, too, because as we've said all throughout, Frank and I are taking part in the 11-day power play, and that is this week at Harbor Center. If you haven't gone down and check it out, go check it out. I'm playing Wednesday from 3 to 6 p.m. with the WGR team, along with the likes of Brayton Wilson, Sneaky Joe, Pat Malcaro is joining us this time around. Owen Parker, the giant goalie son. Our program director, Alan Davis, is on this team. Like John Simon's on this team. There's a bunch of people. You should go check them out. You check all of us out. Or you can jeer us, you know? Jeer against us, against the media all-stars, who are a collection of members of the Western New York media that will be facing off against WGR on Wednesday afternoon, 3 to 6 at Harbor Center. And then Frank and I have a very short turnaround as I'm playing 6 a.m. on Thursday morning.
No sleep for the week.
You can sleep when you're dead. That's what I say. Or when you're really tired, like I will be on Thursday, which will probably be why I won't be here.
A little of this, a little of that.
A little of this, a little of that. But, yeah, so Frank and I, we play Thursday morning, 6 to 9 a.m. I'd love for people to come out for that. It's not the easiest ask of all. You should come out for it. And then we can do the podcast there with a phone and then just upload terrible audio.
Wow, now there is an idea.
There's a novel idea right there. And then I can go stereotypical hockey player interview style. Nice job there, Kyle.
This mic moves a lot more.
It moves.
Not at my normal microphone.
You're not, and Frank's is always just like all the way over.
Frank's got the power of the PC, but now I do.
And so, yeah, nice job there, Kyle. But, yeah, that could be a fun little idea. I can go stereotypical hockey guy. Yeah, you know, we just wanted to get pucks in deep and try to make sure to cycle the puck around. And, you know, it was a good effort out there, and we tried to convert some goals and make some plays out there. How was that for?
Pretty good.
For making it up off the spot and not being out of breath.
Pretty solid.
Because that's another thing that has to be there. They have to be out of breath because they've been playing hockey. So, yeah, you know, you just got to throw a bunch of and does in there, and you can hockey player interview anything.
Oh, yeah. Makes us audio cutters so happy.
Yes, so happy when we get those.
The Jack Eichel. And Sam Reinhart.
And you get the... Yes,
you know. Carter Hutton. You know,
yeah. This is a great way to start the podcast. By the way,
got him down.
Great
pat.
Way.
Nothing against yous.
Nothing against yous. We just didn't make enough plays out there today.
Every time I see that name pop up, I know what to expect.
you get to really find out like what your audio cutting metal is worth. Separates the champs from the chumps. If you get audio cuts that say a bunch of and does, well, that person's just not doing enough. And we'll smack him upside the head for you.
That's right.
These damn interns.
That's what we're here for.
As Ed mentioned, Kyle, Frank and I are taking part of the 11-Day Power Play, and now joining us is the man that is the co-founder of the 11-Day Power Play, along with his wife, Amy Lesikowski. Mike Lesikowski joining us now on the Leftovers Podcast. Mike, it's Derek and Kyle. How you doing, man?
Doing great. How you guys doing?
It's been, finally some good weather. We're all running around because of the holiday. We're covering all the shifts that we can, so we get to enjoy this nice AC instead of the actual weather outside.
I've been enjoying the AC in the Harbor Center for about a week now.
Yeah. You've been around an ice rink here as the 11 days been getting started back on Friday. everything got going there. So, Mike, a bunch of shifts that you've been playing already that I've seen on Twitter. How many shifts have you skated so far?
Four.
Four already.
I just got off a roughing shift.
So, what kind of ref are you then? Do you give a lot of calls? Try to give people
some
shots?
Let them play.
All right.
12-12 tie.
There you go.
Game right there.
All right. No pressure. We just got to score more than 12 goals for Team WGR to at least not be the lowest. That's the threshold we're meeting here.
That's a low number.
High standards for us here at WGR. But all right, Mike. I wanted to talk to you, obviously, not so much about, you know, what's been going on with you with the shifts that you've been going on right now, but the evolution of the 11-day power play. From its first year, you guys had the original 40 skaters, including our boss, Alan Davis. And every year, though, you guys have hit over that 1 million mark. And every year, you're surpassing this record of fundraising. This year, already at 1.4 million. What has it meant, the support from Buffalo? And what has it meant for you and Amy and for the cause that you guys have created?
Oh, man, it means everything. I mean, as you were saying that, I literally get chills in my arms because, we never thought when we did that first event, it was really just supposed to be a cool event and raise awareness and raise some money for Roswell. And, it was so well accepted. The guys had such a great time. The community really embraced it. We just had so much fun with it. And obviously we raised a lot of money for great causes. So when that was done, even though it was intended just to be that and kind of be on our way, we felt like we can't not do something else. We got to do something else or continue. There was just so much goodwill, so we got to continue, find a way to continue it. And what we decided was I definitely wasn't going to do that for a second year in a row. you saw some of the stuff that we went through. As fun as it was and as memorable it was, you can't do that every year. You just can't, at least not with the same group of people. And we did have tons of inquiries throughout our event, in the original event, for people to come and join and play a shift because some people kind of didn't understand what we were doing. And we took that and we ran with it. And we said, okay, there's tons of people that want to play a little bit. Let's see what the interest level really is. So the next year we decided to change our gears and do the 11-day power play community shift. And we wanted to keep the good mojo we had with the 11-day theme. And we created four-hour blocks of time, four-hour shifts, if you will, and sent out an application process. And we got tremendous, Buffalo's a great hockey town. Tons of people from age 3 to 73 are playing hockey around town. And we got tremendous applications, a great number of applications and tons of interest. So we did that. Last year we had 1,500 players, which was really cool. And we surpassed the year before. We went from $1.2 to $1.3 million, which is not an easy task, as you guys know. And then it just continued. The community shift was really well accepted. And then when the application process went out last year, we ended up getting so many applications that we took that 11 days and we chopped it into three-hour shifts instead of four-hour shifts so we can add more players, add more teams. And we added about 1,000 players to last year. So we're up to 2,500 players, 11 days, and as you just mentioned, over $1.4 million. And we're scraping at $4 million over 3 years, I don't say it boastfully, I say it very pridefully, which is pretty amazing because the whole community chips in.
So, Mike, your experience as one of those players in that original 40, it's a very grueling process for you guys to be skating that 11 days straight like that. Being able to push through that sort of thing, like you said, you don't want to ask that of the same people again, and you don't want to be trying to make that such a physical grind. But now there's a different kind of grind for you and for Amy and for everyone else that's involved in this sort of thing, because now the next thing you know, you've got to deal with the grind of getting everything organized for over 2,500 players to join in a community shift. So what was the evolution like going from those 40 players and now trying to organize it to get now over 2,500 people on the ice?
It's a lot. And Amy was besides being a survivor and patient at Roswell, she worked at Roswell for a long time. And then when this thing took off, she stepped away from Roswell, and she spends, and I'm not kidding you, 80, 90, 100 hours a week throughout the year working on this. And it's been logistically very challenging. But most people, if they walk in here, they find it very organized, and they have a lot of fun. So you're totally right. It is a grind. We live here the entire time. I give full credit to Amy and our event manager, Sarah. They really run the nuts and bolts. People come to me. And I always say a gas game, me and Sarah, because they really, they got the pulse of this thing, and they're unbelievable. They're forces to be reckoned with. So yeah, and changing out every 4 hours and changing out every 3 hours. We've got, you know, 40-50 guys coming, guys and girls coming in and out locker room. You guys know what it looks like when the locker rooms get set up. Everything's nice and clean, and jerseys are hung and all that stuff. So it's a lot of work, but kudos to about 350 volunteers that give their time over the course of our event too, because we just simply would not be able to do it without them.
Hey, Mike, it's Kyle here. I have a question about potential like expansion. Have you thought about that, going to and growing this to a larger area, seeing the success you've had and the trending in the right direction you've seen through 3 years? I mean, this is incredible growth so far. You've seen what Buffalo can do in terms of raising awareness and money. Have you thought about going and trying to raise awareness in other institutes or other areas, even to like a Rochester or something like that? Not completely around the nation, but maybe expanding outwards of Buffalo.
Yeah. First and foremost, we want this to be an annual event. It's got the right feel for it. We're in the right demographic. Buffalo's an amazing place with, you know, the people in the hockey community. So first and foremost, we want to make sure that, you know, this 11-day power play in Buffalo stays put and makes money every year. That's our first goal. But the answer is yes. Every couple of weeks we get a call from somebody, and it could be just a guy or girl who's interested, or it could be, like, we've taken calls from some pretty high-level foundations that if I said their names, you would know them instantly. I don't want to say that because we do have some talks in the works, but to answer your question, the answer is we absolutely are currently doing our due diligence at looking to expand, because we know that we have a good recipe that's replicable, and so the answer is yes. We don't have anything set in stone, but we're doing all our research right now. And, you know, maybe that takes a year, maybe that takes 3 years, but whatever it is, we want to make sure we do it very very diligently and kind of focused and not rush into it.
So, yeah, Mike, that's an interesting question there, Kyle, that you had about an expansion possibility sort of thing. But, you know, when you originally started this thing, did you ever think that it would actually get this big, where you could actually even have the due diligence of expanding into other cities like that, you know, from it starting as 40 players trying to raise money in what would end up being the world's longest hockey game?
Yeah, no, I mean, the world's longest hockey game is 40 players. You know, it's not, I don't say that to minimize that, but you can get 40 players in New York, Boston, you know, name a hockey city. You can get guys to do that. The folks in Edmonton have done it six times, and the folks in Alberta have done it a couple times. So it's definitely replicable. But to answer your question, no, we weren't even thinking about that. We actually thought, when we first put this thing together, we put a $500,000 goal, and we thought that was lofty. And then when I started talking to everybody, they're like, let's do more. So it ended up being $1 million. The world's longest game, if you think about it, you could probably play it anywhere. It's very difficult to put on, and it's lots of logistics, but pretty much anybody can do it. This particular format, I don't think you can do it just anywhere, and you have to have the right recipe, and you have to have people with some passion, because if you were to see what the time that Amy puts into it, and Amy and Sarah during the event, it's not just a walk or a run or, you know, a golf outing. That's kind of stereotypical fundraising events. It takes a year to put something like this together, so it's not easy.
Now, everyone, the first name that always gets tied to it is, with the fundraising is, you know, it goes to benefit cancer research at Roswell Park. But then when I was at the initial captains meeting this year, Mike, and you guys brought some people from Make-A-Wish and from Camp Good Days, like, those were the causes that really sung to me personally. This year, how did we do with the figures there with numbers for Make-A-Wish and Camp Good Days?
Well, we're still going. You know, we're at 1.4, and we got another week or so to go, so we're still climbing. And the way we've broken it down is we still give the majority of our money to Roswell Park. That's still our primary beneficiary, because cancer research is part of our core mission. And the cancer patient and family care aspect is really important to us too, because, you know, if you know the organizations, they do some pretty amazing things for people, both cancer patients and their families. and we thought that that was good to expand a portion of that. They get the rest of those two foundations get about 20% of our donations, and Roswell gets the majority of it.
Mike, seriously, this has been it's been awesome to be able to get involved with this sort of thing personally, and you know, I met you in a rather inauspicious way last year when I decided to wilden out on a celebration there. So
that was awesome.
I don't regret anything. And so how annoyed are you going to be when I go ahead and try to take it to the next level this year?
You know what? You do whatever in the confines of good taste and don't hurt yourself.
No promises there, Mike. I'm willing to hurt myself for the right cause here, and this has definitely been one of them. But
okay, great.
So how many more shifts you got, though?
So I've done four, and it's been awesome. I had a group from work. I had a group of guys that I played with as a kid called the 1980s Regals team, and friends came in from out of town, you know, like North Carolina, Maine, Vermont, Michigan, and it was really cool to have everybody get back together, so that was a lot of fun. And then we had a group of original guys, and then we had a group of original guys get together and play against another team. So that's great. I'll play overnight tonight, and I'll play at least two other shifts besides that. So it should be eight. I did eight last year. Should be eight this year. And as I tell everybody, I want to put my money where my mouth is. I was the top individual fundraiser, and I promised if I got to that, I would play more hours than anybody else, and then I'm sticking to that.
Mike, you're a good man with a good cause here, and it's always good to be able to talk with you and you know, try to at least bounce some ideas off you as well here. So, but it was good to actually get you on here and be able to talk with you on this interview. But thanks again for taking the time. And
Thank you. Unfortunately
for you, you'll definitely be seeing me over the next couple of days on Wednesday and Thursday.
That's awesome. I can't wait to see you guys.
That was Mike Lezikowski, the co-founder of the 11-Day Power Play, along with his wife, Amy. And they're such great people. They really are. And it's a great cause. It is one of the coolest things that I've ever been a part of, and I'm excited to be able to double that up this year and do it twice. My shift's a little funky, you know, because I'm playing Wednesday night and then Thursday morning. But compared to what those guys did with the original 40, where they were playing, it was like almost every 4 hours, it almost seemed like. They would play like twice a day for 11 days, and like it's 4 hours on, 8 hours off, 4 hours on, 8 hours off. And they had a rotation. And that kind of grind, oh, come on, man. I can do two shifts in less than a day. Whatever.
Small price to pay. That was awesome stuff, though.
Yes, and it's a great thing to be able to work with them as we did last year, and we're doing so again. And Team WGR coming back at you, and you better bet that I'm going to wilden out on a celly. I celly hard. That's what I do. That's who I am. I don't care how obnoxious it makes me look. If you've listened to this podcast, you really know I have no self-shame. So I'm going to have as much fun as I possibly can. That's why I get into this sort of stuff. That's why I'm in radio. That's why I play hockey. I don't do it because it's something to, help pay the bills primarily. I mean, I can get any job and pay the bills. I can get into radio and be a little silly sometimes. I can make sure that I'm trying to make people laugh or, you know, deliver sports takes or anything like that. That's unique.
Only the hottest of sports teams.
Only, I mean, I'm not DiBiase over here. I'm not flinging things around, but I'm not getting Troy Aikman to say who cares. Okay, that's not my thing. It's never been. I'm usually the kind of person that would call out wild takes, like something from like a Jerry Sullivan or something. But anyway, the thing is that, you know, the other thing, you know, like playing hockey. I love playing hockey. I'm not good at it. I'm freaking terrible. But and maybe, if I'm lucky, I might be able to get a GoPro and you people might be able to see just how terrible a lot of us are at the station. So, Kyle's smirking like, I'm ready for this.
Now that would be the icing on the cake.
That would be the icing on the cake. You know, get a little GoPro on the bench there, attach it to someone's helmet, and just have a time.
You know what we should do with you next year? It's an idea I saw on YouTube. There's a crew over at TSN, they call themselves Bar Down.
Oh, yes, Bar Down, yes.
Yeah. They went to, it looked like a club hockey game with one of their guys. They put an iPhone up in somewhere in his jersey.
Oh, okay.
And were giving him directions as if they were holding an NHL 19 controller. So they said, all right, awesome. I'm hitting R1. You got to spam poke check.
That's awesome.
And that the guy amazing. On the ice was just spamming the poke check button.
And they've got a camera on this guy?
Yep.
Oh, my God. That's fantastic.
I'm hitting L1 and R1. You've got to dive. I'm double tapping Y. You got to start fighting somebody.
You know what? Now I'm going to talk to Lezikowski about this one, because if I go play a Bar League game like that, and people watch that, that might be a fun way to get some money. Like,
oh, yeah.
Stream it and have people donate, and then just next thing you know, they donate, and I got a spam poke check.
Yep.
They donate, and I'm at the red line with the puck. I got to take a slap shot. Like,
it was a very funny video to watch.
That's actually a fantastic idea. Yeah. I saw the one from them where they had, like it was like 1,000 pucks for warm-up, and they just dumped them all on the ice. That is obnoxiously hilarious. That's exactly the kind of thing I'm all about. And, again, it's... I always make sure to emphasize that it's for a good cause, but, you know, at the same time, it's freaking fun to play that hockey. It's a great challenge for you athletically to be able to play. I mean, last year was the four-hour shift. I should have asked Mike about this one, if they're going to go back to 4 hours, because 3 hours is going to not seem like anything for me after what I did last year. But, yes, humble brag, I know. But... it's not just a test for you athletically. It's also, it's supposed to be fun. And I remember thinking, heading into hour four last year, that you know, everything's going through, we're done with it. And I remember right afterward, I thought, that was fun. I want to do it again. I want to play right now. And Gates looks immediately at me and is like, are you insane? Yes, I am, actually. Thank you. So that came up with the idea for me to play twice this year, and then I'm literally getting what I'm asking for. I'm done playing one shift. I'm going to be playing right away again. So
judged on the amount of people that have been added to this 11-day power play by year, that may be the route you're going to have to go. Because yeah. I don't know if they're going to have the ability to dole out 4-hour shifts if this keeps growing the way it has in 3 years. You're going to have to cut those shifts even shorter.
It was 1,700 last year.
To accommodate all those guys.
And now they're over 2,500 players. And that is, yeah, you are right. It's unfortunate, like, because I'm selfishly asking about playing another extra hour. But, man, it's a rush, actually. Mm-hmm. And you go into it having fun. You go into it with a smile. And you go in deciding, hey, we're gonna go ahead and make some people happy. And we're going to try to make some lives better. And... for the people that show up, you got to give them a little bit of a show. That's my personal thing.
I heard Ryan got pretty beat up last year.
Ryan got beat up last year in an odd way. Everything just kept hitting him in the face. And Dummy didn't wear even a visor. So the last one happened in the last hour where the puck just deflects, hits him. I'm done. I quit. I'm done. To which then... someone very easily and snarkily goes, oh, you're quitting something again. What a shock. So,
in this business, that is what we call low-hanging fruit.
Yes, and I'm sorry, but Ryan sometimes spews low-hanging fruit. It's very easy sometimes. I've got that same thing. I get things wrong almost quite often. And the first thing I will do for that low-hanging fruit to counter it is immediately go ahead and laugh at myself for saying, oh, Nathan Peterman was a good idea. I like this idea. This isn't going to go so bad. Oh, it went that bad. But yeah, it's a great cause. It's awesome to do. And I'm sure that on the next podcast, whether Frank and I just man up and come in on Thursday, or if we end up doing next Monday, we're going to talk about our experiences. And Kyle's going to probably, on that nightcap that Wednesday night, yes, by the way, Kyle's hosting the nightcap Wednesday night. Kyle's going to be talking with me and several others from GR and from the 11-day, whoever we can snag on to put a headset on the nightcap and recap what we did, what we went through, and maybe if we won, possibly.
Yeah, pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, so John Vogel, I'm coming for you. Glove side, Selly hard. Let's go, son.
It's the post-game interviews. You hear them on WGR. Sabres postgame. We've got 11-day postgame on Wednesday night.
Yes, we're going to have 11-day postgame. You know, Paul was on the bench last year, and man, he was a riot. So Paul was fantastic. He came in, suit and tie and everything, almost like a bench boss, and just made fun of every one of us. It was fantastic. So If you're listening, thank you. Go down to the 11-day power play. Check it out. And I'm going to try to I'm definitely going to do it tonight, where I'm going to stop over there for the people like doing the 3 a.m. shift. Why? Because they need it the most. Those are the people you need to be able to help cheer on a little bit, because they're not going to have much of a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give them a little support. Do something.
That's good of you. Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And those kinds of volunteers, those are the ones that she gets him even more credit. The ones that are there making sure that everything's okay, because they have medical personnel there all the time. Because, I mean, come on, you're playing a three-hour hockey shift. Not everyone's made to do that. But those are the people, the volunteers, the scorekeepers, the referees. You just heard Blazikowski saying that he was just done refereeing. I don't think I could ever ref. I give refs too much of a hard time in Bar League. I don't think I could ever do it. It's like, I don't know, sleeping with the enemy kind of thing. Even though it'd be for volunteering for refereeing in a charity hockey game.
A traumatic experience.
I just don't think I could do it. I would never be able to do it.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
All right, let's move it along here, though. You know, as much as I would love to keep going on the 11-day power play, I know we're not done with it. But we should at least move on here on the podcast, if I'm not mistaken, right? Probably a good idea. Sabres have done some things.
So one of us, hey, breaking news, one of us got something right.
Suck it!
As you could probably
pick up on.
Yes, infer from that reaction. If you recall, about a week ago.
It was me. I got something right.
Derek, Frank, and myself.
I'm so proud of myself right now.
Rated our top three free agent ideas for the Buffalo Sabres.
It was the top three, not Joe Pavelski, free agent ideas, by the way, because we all wanted Joe Pavelski. I remember that.
Right. And, yes, I still have one on the board.
He's not signed yet.
Is based off this signing, will probably not be coming to Buffalo. So I'm technically in the running, but right now you are in the lead. Marcus Johansson.
And
the newest Buffalo Sabre.
And can I say, great job by them to wait it off. You know, there were rumors he could get $6 million a year. Oh. I really wasn't worrying about that. But the Sabres get him on a two-year deal, 4.5 cap hit. And it's exactly what happens to a player that is talented but had some injury woes over the last 2 years. This is a fantastic signing. You get him at a decent value. And he's a guy who has produced in the past in Washington and most recently with Boston once he got traded from New Jersey.
And you were talking about it too, that playoff
run, you would get worried about Ville-Leinoing a guy mm-hmm. and overpaying him just because of that. But Marcus Johansson is more than that. He's not just a guy who made a heroic playoff run. No, he's a guy who's been a top six staple for the Washington Capitals for years past. So he's definitely done this before. And
it's not easy to hold that role either with the guns they have up there. You're talking they've had an established first line,
yeah,
since TJ Oshie got there 4 or 5 seasons ago. For the most part, the rest of the top six has been plug and play. While they had Johansson, he was pretty much a staple.
Yeah, and in the six years that he played for the Washington Capitals, it was 27, 46, 22. That was a 34-game season. His rookie season, 27. Then he steps up, 46. Only plays in 34 games. I think it was a lockout-shortened season, as a matter of fact.
Which
the
one?
22 points. 12-13?
Yep.
So that was the lockout-shortened season. He gets 22 points. 44, 47, 46, 58. He has that career high. He gets traded to New Jersey. And then, thanks to injuries, he only gets a combined 41 points with the Devils. He gets traded to Boston, 3 points in 10 games. You think, okay, maybe they got a depth guy or something like that. Blows up in the playoffs, goes off for 11 points as the Bruins make the Stanley Cup final. And now he signs in Buffalo on a fairly decent price because his contracts before that, 4.5 on 3 years. And just like here with
Oh, wait, no, that's the Buffalo contract. That's my bad.
I think he was around 4.875.
Yes. Yes, it was. I was not looking at the Buffalo contract. I was right. It was 4.58.
Okay.
And there was a modified no-trade clause. That's what stopped me because I knew that the Sabres gave him a modified no-trade over 2 years. So, yeah, he had a three-year deal, 4.5 per season. Looks like he didn't really get much more than that and maybe even a step less. But you're getting a guy who's same contract, and if you would have told me that, if the Sabres would have acquired him via trade, for example, I would have loved that. Been like, sign me the heck up for all of that. And now you get him at the same price hit. You do have to see if he can prove it, if he can get a little healthier. But now, you look at this sort of thing. And it's a very encouraging kind of contract because it helps kind of push down the order a little bit. And that's the big thing, is that with roster surgery, which is, by the way, not something Jason Botterill ever said. It was implied via Elliot Friedman. But in order to remove some players out of the lineup, you kind of have to logjam things a little bit. That's how you end up with, say, the potential of Zemgus Girgensons getting waived in training camp or something like that. Or seeing Vladimir Sobotka getting stuffed in the press box every night. In order for players to be removed from the roster, you have to add something. And that's what they've been doing. They added Jimmy Vesey. They added Marcus Johansson. They make sure to re-sign C.J. Smith. They're going to make sure to try to develop Tage Thompson and Alex Nylander. If you can get these guys at the bottom of the roster to kind of gel a little better here, that's where your problem was. You had top line scoring. You had top flight scoring. You didn't have it coming from really anywhere else. Reinhart could drive his own line. If you separate Eichel and Reinhart, you might have two solid lines of scoring. It was the rest of your forward group, your bottom six, that was dreadful in putting up any sort of point production that you end up with these problems. And that's why the Sabres were terrible for the second part of the season. The question that you're going to have, though, is Casey Mittelstadt playing second-line center?
That's what I was going to pose to you. Is Marcus Johansson your second-line center? Is he your second-line left winger? Is he your third-line center? Is he your do you drop Connor Sheary down to the third line, extend the left wing, bring Johansson in on Mittelstadt's wing, do something with Sam Reinhart, do a plug-and-play on the top line because you saw what Jason Pominville could do with Eichel and Skinner last year? Do you really need to make, in your eyes, first line center a priority with Sam Reinhart, or are you here to spread the wealth and use his talents on a second line, like you mentioned, and try and find somebody that could just kind of hang around with Eichel and Skinner and add a little bit of depth to that wing? Because you don't need to overload the top.
Now, here's the thing. I respect the analytics game. I don't dive too deep into it. One, because numbers confuse me and I hate math. But second, the obvious things can be shared. For example, Sam Reinhart could drive his own line. He is not Jack Eichel's lackey. Last season proved that. You can use your eyeballs to figure that out. Maybe if your coach decided to use his eyeballs and maybe some analytics in this sort of thing, he would have been able to figure that out himself and possibly not get fired. But he stuck to that one line and one line alone, and that's all you got out of scoring was one line. That's how you get fired. Misuse of your players. Mismanagement of your lines. I think Marcus Johansson starts off as a second-line center, but he doesn't finish that way. He's a very versatile player that could play on the top three lines at any position. He is not a natural center. He was not often seen as that, but he has played it. That's where a lot of people might go, oh, is that a Ville Leino thing? No, because again, he's done more than Leino did at any point of a free agent signing, and he's also getting far less money. Do not compare the two. Don't do it. Don't try to do it. Just don't. Everything that I've got about this is a fantastic signing. It's a versatile piece, and you'd be allowed to work things around. Connor Sheary, by the way, has played right wing in his career, and I suspect that the first line might open up as Skinner, Eichel, Sheary.
Okay. I like that idea. Speed.
Speed, scoring,
and an elite playmaker that can get it to either of his wingers as gunners. Reinhart can drive a line, create plays. He's a playmaker extraordinaire. And then you can float the name Victor Olofsson in for a little bit of lighter minutes in second line play or third line play.
Yeah, they've got some interesting wing surplus right now for sure.
And not to mention Marcus Johansson is a player that can also drive things on his own at times. And the charts seem to back that up.
Yeah, I saw some really good. I'm sure we're talking about the same chart about his power play zone entries.
Zone entries are very strong.
Huge.
His zone entries are very strong, which is something you need. You need more guys that can get the puck into the zone. You know, and one of the jokes that you see is, oh, good, another talented zone entry guy that Rasmus Ristolainen can ignore, which was a pretty funny thing. But at the same time, it's another guy that can get you the puck in the zone. You had maybe three of those last year. There were only two that I could look at when they're carrying the puck in the, and they're heading toward the offensive zone, and I could think, all right, puck's getting in. Let's see what happens. It was Eichel and Dahlin. Those were my guarantees.
Yep.
Reinhart turned into that with smart passing plays and everything like that. It's not necessarily him entering the zone, but he creates the play to make sure that it happens, for example. But if you need a puck carrier to get the puck into the zone, you just signed one. And that's huge. You need more of that. If Casey Mittelstadt can grow his game, that might be another player that can do that for you. He's got the handles to do it. Now it's just going to be, can you show the appropriate vision and be used to the speed? Everything about this, to me, is a fantastic signing. It's not just because I called something right for once on one of my guesses for Sabres free agents.
It's part of it.
It's part of it, but it's nowhere near the reason. It's the reason I throw that name in there is because I wanted that signing to happen. And now it did. And now I'm happy twice because it happened. I called that it would happen, but also I wanted this. This is a guy that really could help you out. And there you go. Now you've got it. The Sabres are at $6.6 million in cap space. They have four restricted free agents they still need to sign, and maybe they try to tool around with the bottom of the roster or maybe more Rochester players or something like that. Something tells me, Kyle, they're not done yet. I think there's another move between now and training camp.
And that move for you is?
I suspect Rasmus Ristolainen.
You'd not be alone.
Because you think about it, they have a little bit more of salary cap left. Depending on what happens with these four free agents that are hitting arbitration, I think McCabe probably gets a 1.6 or something like that, similar to what he got this past season. Because you can look at it the same way with Marcus Johansson. Johansson gets 4.5 over two injury-riddled seasons. His last contract was 4.5. Jake McCabe's been banged up at the last end of the season these past couple years. Probably sticking around 1.6. Because his last contract, 1.6. Arbitrator probably will go ahead and favor it that way. Olmark's going to get a little bit of a raise, I suspect. Possibly. I don't know. His statistics don't really fight in his favor. I don't know why Remy Elie filed for arbitration. He might actually get a pay cut. Somehow.
What was he at?
I don't know. Probably minimum.
Pay cut for minimum?
I don't know. That, like,
dude, that would be a story.
The dude played in the AHL all year. What are you going to do? Yeah, Ellie made... looks like... yeah, it was $735,000.
So he could get a cut.
He could get a cut somehow, actually. But yeah, my point still being... come on. Things happen. Why'd you file for arbitration? You might end up getting just a flat $700,000.
So with Marcus Johansson in the mix then, going back to your original point of one major move left before training camp, but the general consensus, if Rasmus Ristolainen was to be moved by Jason Botterill and the Sabres organization, the expected haul, the anticipated haul, for one of the biggest needs on the roster was going to be something along the lines of a second-line center. with Johansson in the mix now, I understand he wasn't priority A from many fans, suitors, idea makers. What is your perfect return now for a guy like Rasmus Ristolainen?
You ready for a dumb one? Oh, always. By the way, first off, Evan Rodriguez also going to get a substantial bump.
Yes, he is.
Rodriguez was not making a lot of money in the National Hockey League. As a matter of fact, he has been making $650,000 the past 2 years. So there's that, by the way. He's going to get a nice little bump. And good for him. It's deserved. Rasmus Ristolainen. I suspect now this might be more for freeing up the cap for the next couple of years down the road, because you have to re-sign Montour. Or you certainly want to be re-signing Montour, I would suspect. You want to definitely re-sign Sam Reinhart.
Gotta worry about Rasmus Dahlin down the road.
Gotta worry about Rasmus Dahlin extension. If VC or Sherry are guys that you want to keep along for the next season or a little bit more of a longer term for your middle six, those are things that you might need to look into. There are only four forwards with the inclusion of Johansson on the NHL roster right now that go past 2021. Or that even go into 2021, excuse me.
Right.
One of them is an anchor of a contract you want to get rid of. And Kyle Poso. You might need to free up some of this salary, and Rasmus Ristolainen's at 5.4 over the next couple of two seasons. Don't be surprised if Ristolainen turns into picks or prospect level kind of player. He's 24 now, so not exactly the prospect level kind of guy anymore. But if teams value him as a top four defender, or maybe even some team looks at him as a potential top pairing guy still, if you can get a good prospect back on the way, or get a good pickup back along the way, I'm for it at this point. And I suspect that might be the direction that Jason Botchel might want to go in with this. It's not necessarily cap dump, but it's not taking on salary for a player either.
Well, it's good to get ahead of the game.
It's good to get ahead of the game, and that's exactly what I suspect you'd need to do in this instance. You do have a lot of money coming off the books this next season with Bogosian, Scandella, Sobotka, Hunwick. All of those contracts are gone. And then there's guys that you're definitely going to want to keep around, like a Sam Reinhart. And Casey Mittelstadt needs to be re-signed. That's probably a bridge deal at this point. Jurgensen's comes off the books after next year as a UFA. And if you want to keep Sherry or VC around, you're going to want to re-sign them. McCabe, if you want to keep him around again. You have things that you need to do, and you need to figure it out.
I think this will be a big, just looking ahead, and this is very...
Like Lawrence Pilot's a guy that you're going to want to keep around. His deal is up after next year.
You think this could be the last season if it goes poorly for the Linus Ullmark experiment? If Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen,
if he shows he's ready
in a year?
Yeah. If he's ready in a year, then yes. Maybe Ullmark can then sign in as to be like the Rochester goalie or the backup and battle with Hutton. This could be it.
At least in a starting capacity.
In a starting capacity, yes.
A year down the road, it would become goaltender carousel.
Yes.
Because if Luukkonen is ready, he gets a chance at the starting nod. You're in flux with Ullmark, and you also only have a year left of Carter Hutton.
Yep. You might battle that out and see if Ullmark or Hutton can get dealt for something, for example. Yeah, there's ways around that, but you're absolutely right. That's something that needs to be brought up is, could this be the end of the Linus Ullmark experience? If so, well, that makes me sad because he's a great quote.
He is a great quote. Reaping the fruit.
You can't just be a jackass or a numbnuts out there, you know? So, Linus Ullmark is a dandy of a human being, and I hope that he succeeds. But you might be right on this. It's a good question to pose at this point. All right, Kyle. I think it's time we move on from some hockey stuff. Yes, that's right. You're looking at me like, wait, did you just say that? Yes, I did.
I'm just trying to get a look at our website, too. I wanted to refer people to WGR52.com, but I needed to confirm it first. I know Marcus Johansson met with the media around 10 o'clock on the Instigators. I'd like to see if it was on our website, so you can hear it if you'd like.
I'm sure it's on our website. Brayton Wilson does a great job of loading things as quickly as humanly possible on a general scale of things. It's probably under Sabres audio, perhaps. So, yeah. If it's not, there it is.
Sabres Hockey tab under on-demand audio. If you missed it earlier today, some good quotes in there. He's excited. Good stuff on Ralph Kruger. Excited to play with Jack Eichel and Rasmus Dahlin. It's good stuff for the newest Sabre forward, as I think it's only fair to call him that because we don't know what the hell he's going to be playing quite yet.
Yeah, it's
can't really lock in on a position on Marcus.
All right. You ready?
Born ready.
It's time. Because it's Monday, and Kyle's here. It's time for the 3 up, 3 down in Major League Baseball.
Which is currently about to begin. It's All-Star break, people.
Is that a down or an up?
It's kind of an up. Home run derby tonight.
Yeah, it's true. Rip dingers.
Dip ringers.
All of the ringers.
I guess that will start down number one, though. We did have a change in the starting eight in the home run derby as of yesterday. Home run league leader Christian Yelich of the Milwaukee Brewers is backing out. Back injury, didn't want to push it. Kind of a bummer. He's been a great renaissance. Not even a renaissance story. He was always a great player. But finding power in a major way with the Milwaukee Brewers over these last two seasons is being dealt from Miami. Yeah, it's even more of a bummer. As I was telling you this before the start of the podcast when I was creating some notes. A story surfaced on Friday. The Brewers were in Pittsburgh for a weekend series at PNC Park. And a reporter was tweeting out a little story from pregame batting practice where Christian Yelich was hitting and was getting ready for the home run derby, taking some of those massive dip ringer cuts, and actually hit a baseball into the Allegheny River past right field in Pittsburgh, shattered the window of a boat. Did not get arrested.
You probably paid some reparations for him, probably happily.
100%.
He's like, wait, I broke the window on some dude's boat? Yo, I'm sorry, man, but that's awesome. Here you go, buddy.
Worth it.
Yeah, that's worth it. You know, that's a story right there. Like, wait, I did what? Oh, crap. Here you go. Don't worry about it. It's on me. But that's great that I busted the window on your boat. That'd probably be how I'd go about that.
Oh, yeah. A little bit of an aside, too. I'm just getting a notification from MLB at Bat while we're on the topic of the All-Star break. The All-Star game starting pitchers were announced. Hyunjin Ryu makes his first ever All-Star start from the LA Dodgers, having an insane first half. And Astros righty Justin Verlander, his second career All-Star starting nod. So we got it, Verlander versus Ryu in a matchup of the 2017 World Series teams, the Astros and the Dodgers.
Nice. All right, Kyle. What else we got on the downside of things?
Well, if you listen to these podcasts every week, you know that somehow, some way, this team finds its way onto the downs. Sometimes the ups, too, because they have an incredible rookie. But on the downs a lot, too.
I'm going to guess that a certain pair of coworkers of ours are fans of this team.
Big fans?
Oh, no. It's time. All right, Kyle. Beat up on them.
Yeah.
Sorry, John. Sorry, Hose.
Yeah, guys, come on. Until they have to get out of the camera eye to give me some new reason to not keep them in this. But yes, New York Mets, people. You got your general manager, Brody Van Wagenen, throwing chairs now after losses, channeling his inner Billy Bean. Rough first half for the Amazons. 40-50 they end before the All-Star break. And another thing, too, there's a new Met killer in town, and his name is former Met, Jay Bruce. I wrote down here, you know, the regretting of the Edwin Diaz, Robinson Cano trade from the Seattle Mariners is getting realer and realer by the day as Sugar Diaz continues to blow saves and Robinson Cano hits to the tune of a 620 OPS. And then you turn around and see originally part of this mega deal in the offseason was, all right, we need to offset some money. So Seattle, here's Jay Bruce. What was thought to be a washed-up player, for all intents and purposes, was pretty much washed at that point. Did not live up to his contract with the Mets. They ship him off to Seattle, who is expected to be a pretty poor team this year. They can take on some money. It's another trade piece. Turns out it was a trade piece. He goes to Philadelphia. Interdivisional rival of the New York Mets. In 28 games since arriving in Philadelphia, Jay Bruce has hit 10 homers, four of which have been against his old team, the New York Mets. He hit two more yesterday to back up Aaron Nola's gem. The Phillies beat the Mets. And, yeah, in the 2000s, it was Chipper Jones, the Braves. It was Pat Burrell of the Phillies. Noted Mets killers. 2019, it's Jay Bruce.
Yikes.
And one thing he does not share in common with Pat Burrell and Chipper Jones was he was never Met property. Or he was Met property, I excuse. Down number three, we actually go to the Phillies. Jake Arrieta, his season is in jeopardy. It was revealed on Saturday, potentially Sunday morning, that Jake has been pitching with a bone spur in his pitching elbow, and he could have surgery that could end his season in Philadelphia. This surfaced after hitting three Mets on Saturday night, including Todd Frazier, who has now been hit seven times by Philadelphia pitching in the last two seasons. And some tensions really rose in postgame. It was kind of startling to hear in today's day and age where everybody is very buddy-buddy in postgame, and you very rarely hear people spout off. Well, Todd Frazier had some choice words to the New York media after Saturday night's game, and that wind blew to the Phillies clubhouse, and Jake Arrieta got word of Todd Frazier's comments and told Todd that if he has a problem with the way I pitch or the way this team handles itself or how we pitch you inside and you can hit a lot, that he can come talk to me in person and I will dent his skull.
Oh, nice.
I couldn't believe that when I read it. You don't see those anymore.
That is fantastic.
Teammates? Sure. Jake Arrieta has called out teammates during his tenure in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
But not the opposition. That's serious.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Right? I'll dent his skull.
I'll dent his skull.
Says Jake Arrieta.
That is fantastic.
This is a man who at one point posted a photo of himself in a Speedo sweeping up his house after the Phillies signed Bryce Harper, saying he was getting his house ready for Bryce. Interesting guy out there, but yeah, definitely some eye-opening comments from what was supposed to be the Philadelphia ace when he signed on there before the 2018 season. To the ups. We stay in the NL East.
Oh, wow.
And up for the Washington Nationals.
Look at that.
A national surge. Yep.
Carry on.
Washington, yes. I wrote them off. My team, my favorite team, I actually picked them in the preseason to miss the playoffs, but they are giving me a run for my money. They have been the best team in Major League Baseball since May 24th. Going into May 24th, they were 19-31 through 50 games. Since then, they are 28-11, which evens the record out to 47-42 through 89 games. They're 6 games back in the Braves. They are first in the NL wild card. They've won, here you go, 10 of 12, 15 of 19, 24 of 34, and 28 of 39.
Look at that.
Out of nowhere.
Look at that. I mean, it's like this team had talent all these years.
Imagine that. Imagine that. Huge June for Max Scherzer, by the way. 6-0, nearly 70 strikeouts. ERA under 1.
I feel like he's fine.
5 walks. 7 innings, 10 Ks with a broken nose.
That was amazing, by the way. Breaks his nose in BP and then just comes back, no big deal. Whiff them all out.
That's right. Up number 2. Yep, if you're used to it, you're used to the down, you're used to the up. Just when I push the Mets to the floor, I bring them right back up with Pete Alonso.
In this, oh, okay. I was going to say, The Mets are in the same ups and downs? No, there's one player on the Mets. It's not the Mets. It's Pete Alonso. Okay.
Yesterday, Pete Alonso broke up Aaron Nola's no-hitter in the sixth inning with his 30th home run of the year. A two-run shot gives him an NL rookie record of 68 first-half RBI. He leads NL rookies this year in homers with those 30 I mentioned, runs batted in, extra base hits, on-base, slugging, OPS, down the line. And those 30 homers is also tied for second all-time by a rookie pre-All-Star break. He trails only, you'll know this name, Mark McGwire.
Only Mark McGwire.
For first-half homers by a rookie, Pete Alonso tied with Aaron Judge right now with 30. Big Mac holds the record with 33 from back in 1987.
I remember he was like on pace to potentially question it, and then, well, he just fell short.
This chair, very squeaky all of a sudden.
It's talking. It wants it to be part of the show.
It's just the Mets. Yes.
Hey,
I'm ready.
Take peace in the fact that it hasn't broken on you, okay?
Oh, my God. That's right. I should have never sat here.
Frank broke a chair last week. That was good.
And we have reached it. Up number three. The Twins.
Still.
Mashed their way to a first half team home run record, which lasted all of a year.
What was it last year?
Last year, the New York Yankees set a new precedent with 161 first-half homers en route to setting a new Major League record for season home runs with 267. Right now, going into the break, the Twins have hit 166. They broke the record on Saturday night with four against the Texas Rangers. I held up my entire hand and said four. So now everybody knows that I apparently don't think thumbs count.
I wasn't even laughing about that. I'm just laughing about the fact that, oh, they broke the record because they had four more in this game. I'm like, jeez.
Just another day in Twinkie land.
And now you just go ahead and let everyone know about your misstep.
My blunder.
There.
Yeah, so they're 101 away from tying the record and 102 from breaking it. And they got 73 games to go in the second half.
Sounds like something they can do.
Another incredible stat, too, 166 home runs through 89 games at the All-Star break. They hit 166 as a team all of last year.
Good for them. Talk about getting some development going on there, huh? There you go.
57 wins, making me look good. Always good to be looking good. Pick them as my central winner.
Look good, feel good, you play good.
Didn't think they were going to mash 400 homers as a team, but here we are.
No, yeah.
And there you have it. We are into the All-Star break, Home Run Derby tonight. Matt Chapman in for Christian Yelich. Vlad Guerrero, watch him. Fun as heck. This is also the youngest overall Home Run Derby we've ever had. Mm-hmm. MLB is going for the youth movement. They want to put their young talent on display. 25.6 is the average age.
What better way than to have the kids just rip dingers?
Rip dingers for 3 hours. That's right, so definitely tune into that. ESPN tonight, we will have it on our airwaves at 8 o'clock as well, following Derek and I on the nightcap.
Yes, we will. Thank you for listening to Leftovers Podcast. I'm Derek Kramer.
And Kyle Powell.
And Frank Arcuri will be back with us whenever we next record. I cannot guarantee Thursday. I can't do it. I cannot do it. I cannot guarantee it. We'll try, but I cannot guarantee it. Why? Frank and I are on the 11-day power play. Thanks to Mike Lezikowski for joining us here on the pod today as well, going a little more in-depth on the 11-day power play. 11daypowerplay.com. You can actually, by the way, go on the site. If you can't make it down there, you can purchase a ticket, $4. You get to watch all of the games going on
via
stream.
Very cool.
Very cool indeed. I had some friends at a lake house last year, including Frank, and someone bought the stream to check it out when we played as Team GR. And I saw a text when I got into the locker room about my ridiculous celebration. What will I come up with next? Well, that's for me to determine if I actually score a goal. So that'll be fun as well.
If you score a goal, you led the team in goals last year. Don't shortchange yourself.
I'm not going to shortchange myself, but I am also willing to admit that I am actually terrible. I'm not Brayton level bad, sorry, buddy. But I'm not good. Let's go ahead and make something abundantly clear. But thank you to Mike Lesikowski for joining us. As Kyle mentioned, we're on the nightcap tonight for Monday for a brief little hour bridge cap. We got a bridgey cap. And then Wednesday, Kyle's hosting it. After we get done playing the 11-day power play, I will very happily join him from Harbor Center. And I would like for you guys to join us at Harbor Center. We play 3 to 6 p.m. on Wednesday afternoon. Head on down there. You can make fun of us. Watch me and go, wait, this dude actually led the team in goals last year? How the hell did that happen? I'm very recognizable. Got a baby blue helmet. Very easy to point out of a crowd and a bunch of jerseys with the number 11 on the back. So that's me, the guy with the baby blue helmet and the ridiculous celebrations.
Just remember, they don't ask how.
They ask how many.
They just ask how many.
Ferda. And also then, by the way, if you're that kind of person that's up in the morning, Frank R. Curie, a member of the pod, and I, we play Thursday morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. So if you feel like poking your head around Harbor Center in the early hours, we'd like to have you. Thank you for listening. We'll be back on a
TBD.
Day.
TBD.
We'll be back on a day. And you know what? As they say, work hard, Sully Hardwick.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. You ready?
Born
it's
ready.
It's time. Because it's a Monday and Kyle's here. It's time for the three up, three down in Major League Baseball.
Which is currently about to begin. It's All-Star break, people.
Is that a down or an up?
It's kind of an up. Home run derby tonight.
Yeah, it's true. Rip dingers.
Dip ringers.
All of the ringers.
I guess that will start down number one, though. We did have a change in the starting eight in the home run derby as of yesterday. Home run league leader Christian Yelich of the Milwaukee Brewers is backing out. Back injury, didn't want to push it. Kind of a bummer. He's been a great renaissance. Not even a renaissance story. He was always a great player. But finding power in a major way with the Milwaukee Brewers over these last two seasons is being dealt from Miami. Yeah, it's even more of a bummer. As I was telling you this before the start of the podcast when I was creating some notes. A story surfaced on Friday. The Brewers were in Pittsburgh for a weekend series at PNC Park, and a reporter was tweeting out a little story from pregame batting practice where Christian Yelich was hitting and was getting ready for the home run derby, taking some of those massive dip ringer cuts, and actually hit a baseball into the Allegheny River past right field in Pittsburgh, shattered the window of a boat. Did not get arrested.
You probably paid some reparations for him, probably happily.
100%.
He's like, wait, I broke the window on some dude's boat? Yo, I'm sorry, man, but that's awesome. Here you go, buddy.
Worth it.
Yeah, that's worth it. You know, that's a story right there. Like, wait, I did what? Oh, crap. Here you go. Don't worry about it. It's on me. But that's great that I busted the window on your boat. That'd probably be how I'd go about that.
Oh, yeah. A little bit of an aside, too. I'm just getting a notification from MLB at bat while we're on the topic of the All-Star break. The All-Star game starting pitchers were announced. Hyunjin Ryu makes his first ever All-Star start from the LA Dodgers, having an insane first half. And Astros righty Justin Verlander, his second career All-Star starting nod. So we got it, Verlander versus Ryu in a matchup of the 2017 World Series teams, the Astros and the Dodgers.
Nice. All right, Kyle, what else we got on the downside of things?
Well, if you listen to these podcasts every week, you know that somehow, some way, this team finds its way onto the downs. Sometimes the ups, too, because they have an incredible rookie. But on the downs a lot, too.
I'm going to guess that a certain pair of coworkers of ours are fans of this team.
Big fans.
Big fans? Oh, no. It's time. All right, Kyle. Beat up on him.
Yeah.
Sorry, John. Sorry, Hose.
Yeah, guys, come on. Until they have to get out of the camera eye to give me some new reason to not keep them in this. But, yes, New York Mets, people. You got your general manager, Brody Van Wagenen, throwing chairs now after losses, channeling his inner Billy Bean. Rough first half for the Amazons. 40-50 they end before the All-Star break. And another thing, too, there's a new Met killer in town, and his name is former Met, Jay Bruce. I wrote down here, you know, the regretting of the Edwin Diaz Robinson Cano trade from the Seattle Mariners is getting realer and realer by the day as Sugar Diaz continues to blow saves and Robinson Cano hits to the tune of a 620 OPS. And then you turn around and see originally part of this mega deal in the offseason was, all right, we need to offset some money. So Seattle, here's Jay Bruce. What was thought to be a washed-up player, for all intents and purposes, was pretty much washed at that point. Did not live up to his contract with the Mets. They ship him off to Seattle, who is expected to be a pretty poor team this year. They can take on some money. It's another trade piece. Turns out it was a trade piece. He goes to Philadelphia. Interdivisional rival of the New York Mets. In 28 games since arriving in Philadelphia, Jay Bruce has hit 10 homers, four of which have been against his old team, the New York Mets. He had two more yesterday to back up Aaron Nola's gem. The Phillies beat the Mets. And, yeah, in the 2000s, it was Chipper Jones, the Braves. It was Pat Burrell of the Phillies. Noted Mets killers. 2019, it's Jay Bruce.
Yikes.
And one thing he does not share in common with Pat Burrell and Chipper Jones was he was never Met property. Or he was Met property, I excuse. Down number three, we actually go to the Phillies. Jake Arrieta, his season is in jeopardy. It was revealed on Saturday, potentially Sunday morning, that Jake has been pitching with a bone spur in his pitching elbow, and he could have surgery that could end his season in Philadelphia. This surfaced after hitting three Mets on Saturday night, including Todd Frazier, who has now been hit seven times by Philadelphia pitching in the last two seasons. And some tensions really rose in postgame. It was kind of startling to hear in today's day and age where everybody's very buddy-buddy in postgame, and you very rarely hear people spout off. Well, Todd Frazier had some choice words to the New York media after Saturday night's game, and that wind blew to the Phillies clubhouse, and Jake Arrieta got word of Todd Frazier's comments and told Todd that if he has a problem with the way I pitch or the way this team handles itself or how we pitch you inside and you can hit a lot, that he can come talk to me in person and I will dent his skull.
Oh, nice.
I couldn't believe that when I read it. You don't see those anymore.
That is fantastic.
Teammates, sure. Jake Arrieta has called out teammates during his tenure in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
But not the opposition. That's serious.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Right? I'll dent his skull.
I'll dent his skull.
Says Jake Arrieta.
That is fantastic.
This is a man who at one point posted a photo of himself in a Speedo sweeping up his house after the Phillies signed Bryce Harper, saying he was getting his house ready for Bryce. Interesting guy out there, but yeah, definitely some eye-opening comments from what was supposed to be the Philadelphia ace when he signed on there before the 2018 season. To the ups. We stay in the NL East.
Oh, wow.
And up for the Washington Nationals.
Look at that.
A national surge. Yep.
Carry on.
Washington, yes. I wrote them off. My team, my favorite team, I actually picked them in the preseason to miss the playoffs, but they are giving me a run for my money. They have been the best team in Major League Baseball since May 24th. Going into May 24th, they were 19-31 through 50 games. Since then, they are 28-11, which evens the record out to 47-42 through 89 games. They're 6 games back in the Braves. They are first in the NL wild card. They've won, here you go, 10 of 12, 15 of 19, 24 of 34, and 28 of 39.
Look at that.
Out of nowhere.
Look at that. I mean, it's like this team had talent all these years.
Imagine that. Imagine that. Huge June for Max Scherzer, by the way. 6-0, nearly 70 strikeouts. ERA under 1.
I feel like he's fine.
5 walks. 7 innings, 10 Ks with a broken nose.
That was that was amazing, by the way. Breaks his nose in BP, and then just comes back, no big deal. Whiff them all out.
That's right. Up number 2. Yep, if you're used to it, you're used to the down, you're used to the up. Just when I push the Mets to the floor, I bring them right back up with Pete Alonso.
I was going to say, the Mets are in the same ups and downs? No, there's one player on the Mets. It's not the Mets. It's Pete Alonso. Okay.
Yesterday, Pete Alonso broke up Aaron Nola's no-hitter in the 6th inning with his 30th home run of the year, a 2-run shot. Gives him an NL rookie record of 68 first-half RBI. He leads NL rookies this year in homers with those 30 I mentioned. Runs batted in, extra base hits, on-base, slugging, OPS, down the line. And those 30 homers is also tied for second all-time by a rookie pre-All-Star break. He trails only, you'll know this name, Mark McGwire.
Only Mark McGwire.
For first-half homers by a rookie, Pete Alonso tied with Aaron Judge right now with 30. Big Mac holds the record with 33 from back in 1987.
I remember he was like on pace to potentially question it, and then, he just fell short.
This chair, very squeaky all of a sudden.
It's talking. It wants to be part of the show.
It's just the Mets. Yes. I'm ready.
Take peace in the fact that it hasn't broken on you, okay?
Oh, my God. That's right. I should have never sat here.
Frank broke a chair last week. That was good.
And we have reached it. Up number 3. The Twins.
Still.
Mashed their way to a first half team home run record, which lasted all of a year.
What was it last year?
Last year, the New York Yankees set a new precedent with 161 first half homers en route to setting a new Major League record for season home runs with 267. Right now, going into the break, the Twins have hit 166. They broke the record on Saturday night with 4 against the Texas Rangers. I held up my entire hand and said 4. So now everybody knows that I apparently don't think thumbs count.
I wasn't even laughing about that. I'm just laughing about the fact that, they broke the record because they had 4 more in this game. I'm like, jeez.
Just another day in Twinkie Land.
And now you just go ahead and let everyone know about your misstep.
My blunder.
There.
Yeah, so they're 101 away from tying the record and 102 from breaking it. They got 73 games to go in the second half.
Sounds like something they can do.
Another incredible stat, too, 166 home runs through 89 games at the All-Star break. They hit 166 as a team all of last year.
Good for them. Talk about getting some development going on there, huh? There you go.
57 wins, making me look good. Always good to be looking good. Picked them as my central winner.
Look good, feel good, you play good.
Didn't think they were going to mash 400 homers as a team, but here we are.
No, yeah.
And there you have it. We are into the All-Star break, home run derby tonight. Matt Chapman in for Christian Yelich. Vlad Guerrero, watch him. Fun as heck. This is also the youngest overall home run derby we've ever had. Mm-hmm. MLB is going for the youth movement. They want to put their young talent on display. 25.6 is the average age.
What better way than to have the kids just rip dingers?
Rip dingers for 3 hours. That's right, so definitely tune into that. ESPN tonight, we will have it on our airwaves at 8 o'clock as well, following Derek and I on the nightcap.
Yes, we will. Thank you for listening to Leftovers Podcast. I'm Derek Kramer.
And Kyle Powell.
And Frank Arcuri will be back with us whenever we next record. I cannot guarantee Thursday. I can't do it. I cannot do it. I cannot guarantee it. We'll try, but I cannot guarantee it. Why? Frank and I are on the 11-day power play. Thanks to Mike Lezikowski for joining us here on the pod today as well. Going a little more in-depth on the 11-day power play, 11daypowerplay.com. You can actually, by the way, go on the site. If you can't make it down there, you can purchase a ticket, $4. You get to watch all of the games going on
nice.
Via stream.
Very cool.
Very cool indeed. I had some friends at a lake house last year, including Frank, and someone bought the stream to check it out when we played as Team GR. And I saw a text when I got into the locker room about my ridiculous celebration. What will I come up with next? Well, that's for me to determine if I actually score a goal. So that'll be fun as well.
If you score a goal, you led the team in goals last year. Don't shortchange yourself.
I'm not going to shortchange myself, but I am also willing to admit that I am actually terrible. I'm not Brayton level bad, sorry, buddy. But I'm not good. Let's go ahead and make something abundantly clear. But thank you to Mike Lezikowski for joining us. As Kyle mentioned, we're on the nightcap tonight. For Monday, for a brief little hour, bridge cap. We got a bridgey cap. And then Wednesday, Kyle's hosting it. After we get done playing the 11-day power play, I will very happily join him from Harbor Center. And I would like for you guys to join us at Harbor Center. We play 3 to 6 p.m. on Wednesday afternoon. Head on down there. You can make fun of us. Watch me and go, wait, this dude actually led the team in goals last year? How the hell did that happen? I'm very recognizable. Got a baby blue helmet. Very easy to point out of a crowd and a bunch of jerseys with the number 11 on the back. So that's me, the guy with the baby blue helmet and the ridiculous celebrations.
Just remember, they don't ask how.
They ask how many.
They just ask how many.
Ferda. And also then, by the way, if you're that kind of person that's up in the morning, Frank R. Curie, a member of the pod, and I, we play Thursday morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. So, if you feel like poking your head around Harbor Center in the early hours, we'd like to have you. Thank you for listening. We'll be back on a day.
TBD.
We'll be back on a day. And you know what? As they say, work hard, sell you harder.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.